Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 987.IS6022, certificate number 6611, the Principality of Sealand.
So this thing belonged to nobody. So when we took it over, we were in a perfect position to declare independence, which is what my father did.
Are you a lot of Americans fetishize the royal family and the aristocracy of Europe. Are you somebody that imagines himself, for instance, learning that the Jennings Castle passes to you because some distant uncle cousin died and you're the...
Suddenly I have a Scottish or Welsh castle somewhere.
Yeah. Has that ever appealed to you?
I think as a child there's a lot of romance to it. You know, dukes and earls and viscounts... Marquises, even, in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
Now it just seems kind of silly, especially when you look these guys up and you see who the last Duke of whatever actually is, and he's just like a pet food millionaire or something.
Yeah, or just, yeah, right, some playboy douche.
Yep. So I think the magic is gone.
But do you think some of that is that we naturally side with the anti-monarchists who say, why do we even have a queen? And we naturally side with them because it's compatible with Marxism?
Well, it's compatible with America. I mean, right. America's built on the founding principle that enough with the kings
enough.
Already. Remember when Ben Franklin famously said, enough with the kings already.
Yeah, come on already.
Patrick Henry was like, give me less kings or give me death.
Or give me...
he died in the middle of the sentence.
He said death, but I don't know. Did he? Was he sincere?
He wouldn't write.
But you know, I would. You could transcribe me, and I would say every.
See, that's a podcaster's that's a podcaster's skill. You know, like I'm gonna, like when I die, I will actually say I will write because I'm such a broadcaster. You know, I'm with it right up to the end.
But I think we also, during the, the royal family of Monaco was in the American papers all the time because the...
we actually have, had a glamorous fairy princess.
That's right, American monarch.
With a kind of not a rags-to-riches story. She was the biggest movie star in the world. But, you know, kind of a blonde all-American girl becoming a glamorous Riviera princess... It's as close to Cinderella as you're going to get.
It is, although, unfortunately, Prince Rainier, not exactly Clark Gable.
That's the thing. I assumed he was good looking.
No.
And maybe Grace Kelly did, too. Maybe she had never seen a picture.
No, neither tall nor good looking. But weirdly, we were really fascinated with her children, right? Princess Stephanie
was, and Caroline, yeah.
They were in the newspaper way more than even...
I feel like they got more of her genes than his, luckily.
Yeah, well, they certainly spent a lot of time naked on the beach, but yeah, they were, I mean, I guess the son ended up balder than, but you know, they dated Rob Lowe. I mean, they were constantly getting in car wrecks.
That's the dream right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you ask any American girl, like, hey, what do you want to do in your life? They will always say, I want to date Rob Lowe.
And then Riviera car wrecks.
And I want to get in a lot of car wrecks. No downside,
to either of those things. I'm going to go to the 1988 Democratic National Convention with Rob Lowe, and then I'm going to go Formula One racing on the Riviera. What could happen?
I think I was pretty impressed with the idea of European royalty, especially all those like petite dukes that were disenfranchised by the revolutions of 1849, or, you know, the sort of, I mean, you don't want to like praise Weimar Germany too much, but, you know, there were a lot of French aristocrats and German aristocrats that don't actually have any rights or privileges anymore, but they're still...
Didn't we do an omnibus about the last Habsburg?
Yeah.
We've done a few of these shows about these questionable...
Yeah, and I think I always...
Tail end of royalty guys.
...express this this sort of romantic longing for that kind of lifestyle, just because it's like getting a PhD, or it's like going to an Ivy League school. You can lead with it. It's like being a firefighter. You lead with it. Even if you don't say it yourself, like it your reputation precedes you. If you're, I just
like the fairy tale cachet of princes and princesses. But as a young man, you're thinking, I wish I had this on my resume.
Yeah, because I sucked for a lot of my youth. I didn't achieve all the things that would give you entree to where I hoped to be,
you're in a job interview at Red Robin, and you're thinking, if I could just tell this guy that I was the
Viscount, the
Duke of Strasbourg.
Yeah, right. I would immediately become a waiter and not have to start as a busser. and I wonder. I think I still carry some of that, where I wish I had one unimpeachable fact about myself that no one could take away. And I mean, I've won a few phony awards for my podcast appearances.
You have a band, like, isn't that pretty good?
Is it because
there's no short way to say it in such a way that it's not like me and all my buddies bar band.
You know, you could say Grammy nominated.
See, that's good.
But I haven't been.
Grammy nominated songwriter.
Nope.
Because the song was Grammy nominated. So here's what you do. You say, I'm a Grammy nominated songwriter.
I wrote a song on a Grammy winning record, but all I got was a certificate.
Yeah.
I didn't get I can't claim to be Grammy winning. I did win a Juno Award. No, a SOCAN Award, which is a Canadian Grammy.
The Juno is the Canadian Grammy. Is SOCAN like kind of the regional Canadian Grammy?
No, it's like the Canadian.
It's like the Albertan Grammy.
It's the Canadian Songwriting Award.
Oh, I see.
So I won a portion of a SOCAN.
It sounds too much like a petrochemical company to brag about. That's
the problem, right? I mean, you know, the best I have is that I was King Neptune of Seafair, but nobody outside of the Puget Sound has ever heard of Seafair.
I think it's still a good conversation starter.
Yeah.
But it may not get you. It may not get you into the Library of Congress archives or something. I don't know where you're trying to get to.
You know, they give you the little pin that that you can wear on your lapel that says, you know, King Neptune, Seafair royalty. But I don't know if this is true for you. I can't keep pins on jackets. I don't know what you're supposed to do. Glue them on there? Like, they're always popping off.
Don't you think the thing doesn't work?
It works, but then it comes unfastened. I don't know if it's just that I am such a rumple that
you don't have enough. You're not wearing enough flair today, John.
I know, because I don't know. It's not like I sleep in cars anymore. Why can't I keep buttons and pins on jackets? So anyway, I don't put my Seafair regalia on my normal outerwear because I don't want to. It would only last 6 hours.
I have an Emmy at home, and I'm faintly embarrassed by it.
You are not. It's right there, right behind your desk.
It's sitting on a mantle because that's a fun place to put it. But like, I would never dream of being like, well, you know, I am an Emmy winning, because I feel like it's fake. I was just it's just a BS producer credit.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of like a SOCAN award.
But no, a SOCAN award is real. It's just Canadian. But you are, you know, your name precedes. You're Ken Jennings, the GOAT. You're the greatest Jeopardy winner of all time. That's like 1,000 PhDs.
I guess it's true that when you imagine, I wish I was the Marquis of something, what you're really thinking is, I wish I had just some fully formed adult identity that isn't unquestionable.
Yeah.
And it's true that winning on a game show actually does that. Like,
yes.
I do kind of feel like a more confident version of myself, because nobody can be like, well, who knows if this guy's good at Jeopardy. At a minimum, they'll be like, well, this guy sucks, but he's pretty good at Jeopardy.
I mean, even if you won Jeopardy once.
Sure.
That's the top line of your Wikipedia page.
Probably.
But if you win Jeopardy, whatever, 700 times or whatever the hell, I keep forgetting how I, 74 times. See? You couldn't make it all the way to 75.
Very good.
Except for the championship ones, and that's put you over 80, right?
I was in game 75, and I lost it. Right. So I always thought of myself as, yeah, 75 games, but no, people want the win.
74, yeah.
Boo.
But still, I think that makes you America's smartest boy, and that's put you in Dutch with a couple of my other friends who wish they were America's smartest boy, and that is... kind of a, that's example of
it's,
you
it's
being
the
royalty.
Only reason why we're friends, because you're like, yeah, like, he really annoys my other friends.
Yeah, just antagonizes a couple of other friends that are up on their high horse.
But I feel like in real life, royalty would have so many downsides.
Especially royalty that comes with no money.
Exactly.
I think if you're royalty, or if you're some kind of, you know, aristocrat, and it comes with some land and a title, and you can waste away your youth in gauche discos.
You can marry someone who's got money but no title.
See?
That often happens.
That's not bad. I would, you know, if I could marry an Italian heiress but bring to the table minor...
Doesn't she have the money and the title in this scenario? What are you
bringing? That'd be pretty nice if she was. If she also had a villa somewhere that had been in her family for 900 years.
It's hard to see what you're bringing here. Songwriting at Canadian, award-winning Canadian songwriting acumen.
That's what I'm saying. I don't have, you know, I won the Seattle Weekly Award for Best Tweet of 2008.
Congratulations.
But that's, I mean, it goes up in the bathroom, on the bathroom wall with my other awards.
Your certificate.
The thing. None of my awards have
they're
awards.
They're all 2D.
Yeah, they're all certificates.
It's true. What you want is a 3D
I
award.
I do.
That's the best kind.
I do. And I've said
this
before.
You can hold
before.
It above your head. You can't hold a certificate above your head. You just look like you're, I don't know,
yeah,
like
you're
picketing
just,
or
yeah,
something.
You're waving some sort of you know, sign that nobody can read. I've had fans send me statuettes for various awards that they've made up for me. But even the Kentucky Colonels, all they sent us was a lapel pin and a piece of paper.
Well, what you need is a 3D printer, because then you can just make a 3D version of all your awards.
No, but that's like changing your own Wikipedia page. You want to actually be the ball, see the ball.
I'm going to sit on my hand until it's numb, and then I'm going to make myself a 3D award.
And maybe part of this is that my Welsh grandfather felt that being Welsh was shameful. And he told everyone that he was Scottish. And in telling everyone he was Scottish, because he was a liar and a malfeasant, he had to bump it up a notch and say that he was Scottish royalty. And my father,
like many Scottish people, yeah,
so much Scottish royalty. So my father and his siblings grew up thinking that they were descendant from some
the
kind
Bruces.
Of
the Bruces.
Yeah. And it was only in the 80s when they went to Scotland, the three of them who at the time were in their 50s, went to Scotland to track down their heritage, and all the Scots said, Roderick isn't a...
never heard of you.
Roderick isn't a Scottish surname. Why do I sound like Paul McCartney?
Yeah, they're from the Liverpool part of Scotland there.
Can never do those accents. And that was when they discovered...
I think the problem is they'd never heard of ye.
Yeah, and they had... So my folks had to take the train down to Wales and then realized, oh, we're not...
Really coming
we
down
didn't
in the
have
world.
A pot to piss in.
I mean, there's always Ireland, so you can still feel good about yourself.
Hmm.
Wales is not the end of that road.
Well, and the problem is it turned out when we did a 23andMe that we were actually Irish and had come to Wales... Like, because it was a step up.
The Wales part was the upwardly mobile thing.
at least Wales has coal mining, which even, you know, which Ireland can't put together.
When Ireland runs out of potatoes, you gotta either choose the coal mines of Wales or the tenements of Boston.
Ken, we encourage people to support the show by joining our Patreon. And our Patreon offers a lot of benefits above and beyond just the good feeling
that comes with supporting great art.
Supporting great art. Can you tell us some of the benefits of supporting our Patreon?
Well, there are multiple tiers. You know, historically, for contributing $5 a month, you get a bonus episode, kind of our best perk at the lowest level, an addenda show.
An addenda show every month where we answer reader mail.
If you give $10 a month, you get that, and you get access to the Patreon feed where we put up photos of show notes and the weird things people send us, and a renewed commitment to post other kind of visual stuff. John and I were just talking about this.
Yeah, we're going to start posting a lot more photographs, nude and selfies, candid shots of us at the beach.
At the $20 level, you get signed show notes.
Actual physical notes sent to your home.
Once a year, we'll send you signed notes from one of the shows we recorded. If there's ever a shortage in subsequent years, you might get assigned something else weird. We've been sending out chick tracts to a lot of repeat donors.
You can absolutely request certain shows if we still have them available.
And
right?
And at the $50 level, that's the Washing Bear tier. This year, you get a cool exclusive Washing Bear t-shirt. In future years, that tier name will change and a different organism will appear on your shirt of the year.
Sentient clams.
Yeah, it'll always be a mollusk, of course.
Sure.
It'll always be seafood. And the $100 level, John and I record you a fun, cool video message. We can take requests for that. But the reason why we're recording this whole spiel is because we have just bulked up, you might have heard, our introductory $5 tier. It was already the best tier because it had the addenda show.
But well, I mean, every tier gets everything that's on the $5
tier.
Oh,
yeah, I forgot to keep doing that. It's a 12 Days of Christmas scenario.
That's right.
Not only do you get 11 Lords of Leaping, you get 5 golden rings.
And 4 calling birds.
And a partridge in a pear tree. So all the tiers, but even the lowly $5 folks, the humblest widow's mite donors, scraping together $5
a month. Our home boys and girls, our home bros.
They will also receive, going forward, VIP access to each new omnibus entry.
That's right.
What does that mean, John?
It means that you will get the show 2 days prior to when it airs to the hoi polloi.
Drops on Thursday for the regulars, drops it Tuesday for you.
Tuesday for $5 donors or above. And also, it will be ad-free. No advertisements. You don't have to fast forward through Ken's and my hair replacement ads and mattress shilling.
You can still, now if you love that stuff, if you're like, I don't want to miss out on the new advances in buckwheat sleepwear.
Right.
That, you can still listen to that on Thursday when the new show drops.
That's right.
But you will have the option to opt out of the ads you don't like.
And total bragging rights. You can go on the internet and just start spoiling the whole episode. You can say, ha ha, they don't get to the topic until 40 minutes in.
Hey, Thursday people, I know who the killer is.
Lol. And there's nothing they can do to stop you.
No, Thursday people are powerless.
Yeah.
They could have become Patreon supporters.
And we're, you know, we don't want to just start calling all the, like, the shirkers Thursday people, but that might actually turn into a global coinage. It might become a meme.
Instead of like, freeloader?
Oh, what's up, Thursday people?
Like, you give a bad tip at a restaurant and the server will be like, look at this Thursday guy.
Yeah, what the hell, Thursday people? You know, why don't you try and be a Tuesday people for once?
Be a little bit Tuesday. You're a Thursday person in a Tuesday world, man.
That's the thing. Gen Z's
are off. They're going to be like, you get a bad tip and somebody's going to be like, it's giving Thursday.
Yeah, or they might even be, you know what they'll do? They'll say, ugh, that's so Thursday. Why don't you be twos?
Thursds. So go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and become a better person, a Tuesday person, if you will.
Yeah, that's right. Be a twos, not a thurs. But you remember the fashion, or I'm not fashion, the fad of being able to buy a royal title in the UK or in Europe.
Was it real? I always thought it was fake, like one of those star registries or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's a website called royaltitles.net.
That's how you know it's real.
Royaltitles.net.
An AI-generated site called royaltitles.net.
And there are, you can buy land that comes with a title in Eastern Prussia, a place that's been through a lot of different incarnations since there was...
Fine, it's Poland.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to call it Eastern Prussia.
Pomerania and Livonia.
Oh, I'm scrolling down. It's a certificate, John.
Yeah, it is. That's problem.
Not
you
what
can
you
be
want.
The Baron or Baroness of Pomerania and Livonia. Let's see what that costs here. You would.
Yeah, what are these here for?
Let's go. Wow, you get like a little, like a Blue Max style.
Look how there's a picture of Neuschwanstein, which is not near any of these places and is also 19th century and is not. like a local barony.
So this says for 219 euros, you can be, and then for 319, you get a pair. So you and your lady friend.
I think Mindy would like to be a marchioness.
Well, wouldn't that be kind of cool? Like, you know, to, I mean, maybe not something to do on the first date, but like, hey, honey, I made us both the Baron and Baroness of Pomerania. I don't know.
It is Valentine's Day as we're recording this. Is this too late for me to make...
It's too late by the time this airs.
Mindy a marchioness? Am I even saying that right? Who knows? There are eco benefits, John. Mm-hmm. They will plant one new tree in the forests of Eastern Europe if you become the Baron of Pomerania.
Wow, you can become a Prince Elector and have a say in who is the Holy Roman Emperor. Wow.
If that ever comes back.
That's pretty hot. But anyway, I think there is some fascination with that.
There's like an FAQ section, and the first one is basically, is this real?
And?
They say, yes.
Yes.
The people who are advertising this attest to its realness. I don't know.
We've done a few different episodes on micronations.
We have. I don't remember what they were.
Well, you did one in Sudan.
Oh, right. The place that no one can own because if Sudan claims it, they lose a better part of Egypt and vice versa.
Right.
I remember. Birtawil.
And, I did an episode on four small countries. But, you know, actually on my list for a long time has been Andorra, Liechtenstein, I guess Luxembourg.
I once pitched a book on these. Did you? I've told you this before. Like, and I'll go to all of them, and it'll be all comic. You know how quaint these little places are, and all the weird things. You know, a three-person navy. It'll be fun.
Uh-huh.
Random House did not want to buy it.
Really?
Yeah. The world was deprived of. I just wanted a free trip to Liechtenstein that I could deduct.
You know, like there's the Principality of Suborgia.
These all seem fake.
I think, well, you know, and I often say I'm from Slobovia just to get out of trouble, and it never gets me out of trouble.
That's the title that will get you your Italian heiress, is telling them you're from Lower Slobovia.
I'm from Slobovia, and I think I got that
We love a Lil Abner reference on this show.
I got that from a Judd Nelson movie from the 80s, Slobovia. But, you know, I think San Marino might be the oldest continuous nation in Europe.
Yeah, oldest constitution, I think they say.
Yeah.
Good job, San Marino.
Hey, well done, San Marino.
And Dan Marino's maybe the oldest guy in a Super Bowl ad this year. No.
There were a lot of old guys in Super Bowl ads this year.
But Dan Marino was in a lot.
But our show today is on the Principality of Sealand. Which is...
It can't be sea and land, can it?
Sea and
Pick
land.
Pick a lane.
Well, interestingly, I mean, when land goes into the sea, at what point does it stop being land and start being sea?
Oh, well, by Washington state law, I think it's the high tide mark.
The high tide mark. And I would say the low tide mark is where it really... I mean, there is a kind of... In between, an interstitial state.
Sure.
But at the low tide line, it's really sea.
It smells like seaweed, not landweed. That's how you know it's the high tide mark.
Oh, landweed versus seaweed.
Because the beach isn't covered with landweed. Right. It's covered with seaweed, that part. That's why it smells.
But it's interesting, when the land goes into the sea, we stop thinking of it as land, although it is land.
I mean, it's rock.
It's not
dry land.
It's sand. It's dry land. That's what we're talking about. And this is sea land. That we're talking about.
What kind of land is that?
Well, Sealand originally, let's set the Wayback Machine to where we really love to be in Omnibus, or at least I do, which is World War II.
Finally.
World War II! Yay! Woo!
Is that the sound effect of World War II?
Yeah, it's one piece of notebook paper being rattled into a microphone. World War II.
Is that like Dresden burning or something?
Oh, wow. Too soon.
It sounded like fire.
Well, there was a lot of fire in World War II, and in our story begins with an attempt to concentrate fire on incoming bombers.
Right.
In the form of anti-aircraft guns that were placed on emplacements.
That's where you would place
them. That's where you place them. And these emplacements were emplaced out at sea. You've seen the maps of... Europe when the during the Ice Age, when the seas were lower.
Doggerland or whatever. You could, you could walk to Normandy if you were into that?
Yeah, you could walk across. The UK was connected to Europe. And
boy, the British must have hated that.
Well, and also think about all the archaeological sites, all the castles and dugout, you know, embankments and frozen knights.
D-Day would have been easier.
A lot easier.
Although, you know, maybe you just get shot at sooner.
But it means that the English Channel is not that deep for a lot of it.
So you can just build from the sea floor?
Yeah, the way that the so.
Or do they have to find like a some kind of promontory that was almost above the waves and then put an emplacement on that?
There are 7 sea forts. They were designed by an Englishman by the name of Guy Monsell, who, and they're known as the Monsell Sea Forts. And there are 7 of them that were placed in the English Channel on sandbars that were shallower portions that, you know, that there would have been buoys there saying like, watch right. out, sandbar here. But they were like 6 or 7 nautical miles off the coast of the UK proper.
Wow.
And the idea just being that you'd have some radar stations and anti-aircraft emplacements out there that as the Nazis were coming over to bomb London, you could have a little advance warning and a little bit of a shot to protect the harbors.
Did it work? Like,
well, yeah, they were active all through the war. You know, I'm not sure.
They never shot down a single
one. I'm not sure how many like stamps of swastikas they had on
on the fort,
the side of the
and
fort.
And they accidentally shot down some RAF jets too, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, they were just, it was just blind shooting in the night, really. But they were designed, they were, you know, concrete structures that were floated out, pulled by tugboats.
Huh. They were built on land, poured on land.
But built in a dry dock, floated out behind tugs, and then the bottom portion was flooded with water, and they sank down onto the sandbar. But they were enormous. You know, they were 4,500 tons.
Wow.
And so once they were flooded with water and sank to the seafloor, they remain you know, a permanent emplacement. They're not, they were designed sort of similarly to the original offshore oil platforms, although offshore oil platforms now are much different.
Taller and more elaborate. But it looks like, when you look at a picture of these things, it does kind of look like a mini oil platform.
It does, although the big towers that that hold them erect are really fat, big, round towers. And in fact, they are full of compartments, living compartments. That's where all the bunk rooms are. They have...
Those aren't below the waterline, I assume.
Some of them are. Oh, you know, there's 7 floors within the tower. So the water out there on those sandbars is you know, you're in 30 or 40 feet of water, but those towers were 60 feet high, and they're on a concrete buttress or a concrete base. So they sit, you know, they sit fairly high up off of the surface of the water, and then they have a big platform built on top of it. And on top of the platform, then you can build another superstructure, a building that houses the officers' quarters and the radar station and all the stuff. And then up there is also the anti-aircraft guns.
I guess today you would land helicopters up top, but I mean, in World War II, maybe right?
You know, they had like a little dock, a little.
You just have to take a dinghy out to your
take
fort?
A dinghy or a boat out there, and there was a crane that you could lift stuff up. And after the war, there wasn't any reason to take them down, but at the time, the English, or rather, United Kingdom territorial waters did not extend all the way out to encompass these forts that were 11 kilometers off of the...
They're in international waters.
They're in what at the time were international waters. And so the Royal Navy continued to sort of occupy them and use them for various purposes, radar stations and, you know, I don't know what. But I don't think prison barges, although that would have been cooler.
They were still army installations.
Until the 50s. And in, you know, the mid-50s, they advances in other technology, probably explicitly ballistic missiles, made them mostly obsolete, and so they were decommissioned. During their heyday, during the war, they had as many as 300 occupants, Royal Navy soldiers.
On a single one?
On a single one.
Because they don't look that big.
They don't.
That would be very that would be like being on a sub or something, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, in those big towers, and I don't know how you would need even 200 people to man a handful of anti-aircraft guns in a radar station.
It's a James Cameron movie, though. Bunch of smelly guys in close quarters on the water.
Yeah, it doesn't seem necessary, but I guess when they built them, they probably thought this is a system that we should overbuild.
And maybe it's going to be attacked. Maybe you need to defend it. Like, if this really is valuable,
right,
maybe this becomes the first battle.
Right. If they're shooting down so many bombers that the Nazis have to surmount them before they can stage the rest of their invasion. Yeah, right. You'd need a bunch of Marines.
Apparently they were not shooting down that many bombers because the Nazis never tried to take them out.
And that's the thing. I mean, these were built after the Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, the Germans realized that they were not going to take the UK in this war. And I think
I like that optimistic take. Like, could still happen.
Yeah,
could still happen. We don't know.
Germany is a very prosperous.
Wouldn't put it past them.
You know, it put them in a little bit of trouble with the rest of us. But
I feel like that would be some shockwaves in NATO if Germany invaded Britain.
When the UK left Europe, they put themselves in a variety of jeopardies.
Their risk of German invasion probably tripled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was very low.
It was low at the time. And in the 1950s and early 60s, as we know from 1,000 other media, it was a time in the UK where it took a long time to recover from the privation of the war.
Nobody had coffee for 20 years. They're all just drinking dirt in water.
Princess Anne did, or Princess Margaret did.
Princess Margaret got the only coffee.
And this was also, I mean, during the rise of rock and roll, there was, you know, this is a time when the BBC, broadcast media, record companies, they were all real institutions that had been established under kind of a government umbrella, and radio waves, which we've talked about in the United States quite a bit. You know, you had restricted access to radio frequencies even now.
Right.
But in Europe, the restricted access, there wasn't a public component. Most of the radio stations were controlled by the government, and their programming came directly from the big recording companies. You know, they were exclusive to the playlists, were not open to whatever a DJ wanted to play.
So a lot of light entertainment, a lot of light orchestras playing kind of light dance music long after that's what kids wanted. And that's why you get stories of all these, you know, these rock and roll era censorship stories of, well, the BBC could never play this hit song because it mentioned Levi's or mentioned Russia or something.
Right. And in particular, mentioned the Queen in anything but a positive light.
Yeah. Sex Pistols didn't get on BBC.
And so that was the dawn. And I'm gonna refer to pirate radio as little as possible in this story.
Because you don't believe in it.
Although it does play a role. No, because I just don't want it to inspire another Decemberist song. or a Clash song, you know, even worse. But pirate radio was a workaround. A lot of...
And what does that mean?
Well, a lot of DJs and people that were culture agitators said, we're going to start broadcasting illegally from various locations.
Where we're outside UK territorial waters and stop us.
There are all these frequencies that aren't being used that we could broadcast. We could get a big enough transmitter that we could hit the major population centers of the UK from a boat, which we could park offshore.
I guess we covered this in the Goat Gland show, how the American equivalent was big Mexican transmitters
right
across the border. Same thing, get around bam, bam, get around bam, regulation bam, and censorship.
Bam, bam, bam. So pirate radio was a mid-60s phenomenon, and on a ship out in the middle of international waters, there wasn't a ton. I mean, there were attempts to prosecute people that were invading the airwaves, but I think it was pretty exciting for the kids, and then they would broadcast to Europe too. And there were, you know, a handful of pirate radio types that would be recognizable even to Generation Z, our many Generation Z fans.
What do you mean? No, I don't mean the second part. I mean, what do you mean?
Just in the sense that they were agitators. They were, you know, nonconformists.
Maybe the equivalent of kind of underground hip hop scenes today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, any kind of world that has a monoculture is going to have an alternative culture. And now that we have 1 million alternative cultures and no monoculture, there's still room for micro alternative cultures within even alternative cultures.
That's about all there is, right?
Yeah, right? Aren't we? I mean, we are an alternative micro culture.
Like this podcast?
Yeah, you and I. Wouldn't you say? We're not part of mainstream podcast culture.
I think there are a lot of podcasts just like this. I would not have thought of us as brave truth-telling iconoclasts.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know about any of those things. But no, I mean, we're
outside the system.
Yeah, we have a ship. It's in territorial waters.
We're not on Podfork or whatever the big network
is. No, and I mean, you're right. There are 400,000 podcasts, but they're out in dinghies. Nobody can hear them. You know, they have 60 listeners, but we're broadcasting with 200 watts of...
So you have to be sufficiently powerful to be an alternative culture.
To be heard in London.
Right.
Which is what's happening here. So there were quite a few sort of pirate radio stations, but the star of our show is a man by the name of Paddy Roy Bates. Paddy, P-A-D-D-Y, an Irish surname, uh-huh. An Irish... forename.
Uh-huh.
Paddy.
Yes.
Right?
It's Patrick, right?
Yeah, but there's not going to be anyone that isn't Irish who goes by Paddy, is there?
It seems very unlikely. Also, the only, and I think all Paddies are Patricks, right? Like nobody in Ireland is naming their kid Paddy on their birth certificate.
Probably not. Paddy Bates had a pirate radio station called Radio Essex that that broadcast from a ship.
Was not in Essex.
It was not in Essex. It was off the shore, off the coast of Essex.
Was Radio Luxembourg in Luxembourg? Or was it also a ship?
I think it was probably a ship. But look, I told you we're not going to do pirate radio because I'm going to save that for another show.
Okay, got it.
It's a good show because there's a lot of pirate radio, but that's not what we're doing here. By 1966, the UK authorities were really working hard to shut down pirate radio. And Paddy Bates, along with who had a pirate radio station named Radio Essex, along with another Irishman, Ronan O'Rahilly, or Riley, but spelled
R-A-H-I-L-L-Y. Extra H.
Who had a pirate radio station called Radio Caroline. They realized that this tower off the coast of Essex... Which had been known as HM Fort Ruffs because it was on some sand ruffs. It was just sitting out there, and rather than bobbing along in, you know, with their radio stations on these ships, which increasingly were being brought to heel by the British regulatory agencies, they took over Fort Ruffs.
That seems even worse. I guess they've been decommissioned. It's not Her Majesty's property anymore.
Yeah, there's nobody there. Maybe a caretaker or two. And in the case of Fort Ruffs, there actually was some radio equipment left over from the U.S. Air Force that was capable of broadcasting some big radio at the, you know, at London. And so the idea was that these guys were going to band together and start a new pirate radio station that was outside of UK jurisdiction. And the UK was in the process of passing what became known as the Marine Broadcasting Offences Act of 1967 that made it a criminal offense to play music, supply commentary, advertising, or to supply any ship that was doing this to the UK. And that explicitly included offshore World War II forts.
Like the act mentioned it.
Yeah.
They had already realized this could be a problem.
But there were lots of offshore forts, but only these seven were offshore far enough that they were outside of the territorial waters of the UK. Paddy and Ronan quickly fell afoul of one another and had a little, like, battle.
Are they living out on the fort? Yeah,
they go out and they seize the fort.
And it becomes the lighthouse and they go crazy and try to kill each other?
Basically, yeah. right away. And
that's great. Right away. I love the idea of doing it on the first day. Like, by evening, they're already seeing mermaids and, you know, going nuts.
Certainly within a year. And then the Bates family takes over Fort Ruffs.
Having ousted Ronan.
Yeah, and renames it Sealand. But never really activate the transmitter or at any point subsequent broadcast any sort of pirate radio to the UK. He immediately lost interest and started to...
This is the most relatable omnibus guy ever.
Started to...
Well, I got my project off the ground.
He started to Captain Bligh a little bit and lose the plot. At one point, some workmen came out to repair a buoy that was nearby, and Paddy's son, Michael, fired some warning shots at them.
All these stereotypes about the Irish are not... he's not doing them any favors.
Well, no. And in fact, then that inspires a group of Royal Marines to come out and arrest them both for firing shots at these buoy repairmen.
Poor buoy repair guys.
But when they're arraigned in the UK, it's determined by the court that there is no jurisdiction to punish them because they're outside territorial waters. Mm. Now, I can't know, and we can never know how much the judges just didn't want to deal with it that day, didn't want to deal with the larger question.
Right.
How nobody really thought that this was any kind of serious matter. But this proclamation or this judgment that they were outside of territorial waters and therefore, you know, let go, you know, tacitly endorsed, as far as Paddy Bates was concerned, the idea that he was independent of UK law, outside of UK jurisdiction.
It sure seems like a bunch of other people would have come rushing into that vacuum, you know, like no activity is criminal on these seven forts.
Well, right.
They didn't all become lawless casinos overnight.
No, they didn't. And I think it was Paddy Bates and his son Michael who were actually willing to settle and hold the ground.
I guess that's how unpleasant it must be out there that nobody else considered doing this.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about living in Hull and then take away even the grocery stores that Hull has, and, you know, and relocate to
Hull without
or Harwich
without the pub.
Yeah.
And without the Tesco.
You have to build your own pub.
What do you have?
So the Bates family declares Sealand a principality. And they...
Who's the prince?
It is Paddy Bates, is the prince of Sealand. And Michael, his son, is the prince regent of Sealand. And they have a constitution. They have a flag.
Is this guy married? Like, is his spouse out there? I wonder, maybe... He's not by this time? I don't know.
Well, I'm not. No, I think that there were ladies of Sealand.
He's married to the former Joan Collins. I presume not the same one. But she is kind of a glamorous character. So, yeah, he's making a family of it out there.
Yeah, that's right.
North Sea.
I mean, he does have grandchildren, as we'll see. And so they're out there in Sealand, and they... they're in defiance of the Marine Broadcasting Offenses Act, even though they're not broadcasting.
Yeah.
And they have multiple instances where their independence from British law or their separate status from British law is reinforced by various rulings. And the one of the key – so they're at this point issuing passports for a fee as a principality.
Just as a novelty, or does anybody want to visit?
Well
– it must be hard to get there.
As a novelty, but also it smacks of sovereign citizenship, that if you travel on your Sealand passport, you would somehow be circumventing duties. And this was at a time when the UK had had like onerous taxes
before
show business
before
people.
Before Maggie Thatcher solved all those problems.
That's right. Before she returned UK to its natural capitalist free market state.
This is why the Rolling Stones are in France, because they don't want to pay their taxes.
That's exactly right.
It's always these libertarians that do this. There's one of these right now in Czech Republic, and it's always just some guy who's like, I'll have my own, well, now, cryptocurrency, and I'll write my own anthem, and anybody can do whatever they want.
Well, and it's hard to know how much Patty Roy Bates, who at this point was going by Roy, or rather Prince Roy.
Do you think people called him that?
I mean, it's better than Viceroy.
It's better. Viceroy Roy.
I think a lot of people called him Prince Roy because people love this kind of thing. And it's hard to know how much Prince Roy was really into this to begin with, or whether establishing this, then fighting for it, he became more and more tetched and actually, you know,
started to think he was the prince.
Yeah, knew who he was and what he was doing. And Prince Roy, he'd been a major in the British Army. He was not just some hippie pirate radio guy. He'd fought in North Africa and in Italy. He was like a, you know, he was a legit sort of eminence. Enough that he could appear as Prince Roy and be somewhat credible, right? He had a little bit of a...
He has a kingdom.
He does.
But it's very small and it's made of concrete.
It's very small and it's made of concrete. Well, by the 70s, he was starting to be approached by business people and other Europeans with the idea, as you suggested, that it become a casino, that all of this outside of state regulations that he had, you know, he had mostly established by this precedent of not being prosecuted.
Yeah.
Like, why don't we turn this into a place where prostitution is legal or whatever, you know, whatever the ideas were. And a German by the name of Alexander Achenbach started negotiating with him on behalf of a coalition of business people to buy Sealand and presumably also buy for £295 the princeship.
Do you know what he wanted with it? Did he also just want it as a novelty thing, or were they actually going to put a casino in?
No, I think their plan was to put a casino and put a you know, and make it a profitable business center in taking advantage of its outsider status.
Yeah.
But rather than...
Untaxable, I guess, right? It's
untaxable, exactly.
I don't know what income you're making there.
Well, and it was potential income more than whatever income there was at first.
Right.
Gambling probably is what it would have been. But rather than actually buy the Principality of Sealand from the Bates family, Alexander Achenbach staged or, you know, invited the Bateses to Austria to negotiate this purchase. And while the Bateses moldered in some Austrian hotel lobby, Achenbach and a team of commandos seized the Principality of Sealand.
He invaded the country.
He invaded the country, and Michael Bates was there as Prince Regent, and they captured him. Yes.
They took the crown prince prisoner.
They did.
Too bad there's no towers to put him in.
So, and at that point, I think the Bateses had granted Alexander Achenbach the prime ministership of Sealand as part of their process of negotiating with him. And so he claimed to have some like that this was a coup d'etat and not just a just an invasion on the with a bunch of Dutch mercenaries.
I don't want to keep harping on this, but it really does show the limits of libertarianism as a philosophy.
Yeah.
You're like, this is amazing. I have no government oversight whatsoever until you're until your son gets kidnapped by Dutch mercenaries, and then you're like, hey, where's my government oversight?
Nine Dutch mercenaries.
That's all it took?
Yeah. And crazily, Bates returned and staged a re-invasion, a counter-invasion.
Wow.
Overthrew the Dutch ministers, and because Alexander Achenbach had a Sealand passport as prime minister— they retained him and prosecuted him according to the Principality of Sealand law.
Its own judicial system.
That's right.
Does it have one?
Well, it did. It did in this case.
I mean, they can do whatever they want. They can throw them. They can throw them in the ocean and have them eaten by sharks.
Yeah, I think that the constitutional monarch in this case, Prince Roy, sat. I mean, it's a constitutional monarchy, of course. But he still is, you know, rules with an iron fist. I don't think there was a parliament.
Where would they sit?
Well, not one of the towers, you know.
Yeah.
At which point, the German government, on behalf of Alexander Achenbach, a person the Germans felt was a German citizen, they sent a diplomat to England requesting that England intervene in releasing the German citizen from captivity and prosecution, whatever life sentence they handed him, from Sealand, and the UK government demurred.
They're like, not our problem.
This is not our problem. This is out of our jurisdiction, and so you're going to have to deal with this.
At this point, West Germany invaded the UK. Like, what a twist that would be in history if Helmut Schmidt's government decided, or Willy Braun or whoever it is, decided to invade the UK.
They did not invade the UK, but they did send the diplomat to the Principality of Sealand to negotiate Alexander Achenbach's release. The diplomat was successful in securing his release.
I assume they just had to write a check or something.
But the Bateses used that then as a precedent for all of Europe recognizing Germany and then Europe to follow, recognizing the autonomy of Sealand.
So Germany had to sign something being like, yeah.
The Germans absolutely refused to acknowledge that they had recognized the autonomy of Sealand. And in fact, Achenbach then established a government in exile called the Sealandic Rebel Government.
Are these guys aware they're doing something funny, do you think, on any level? Or are they dead serious about this series of coups and counter coups they're doing? Because how can you have a shadow government of a country the size of two tennis courts?
Yeah.
There's no sense that they know it's funny.
I definitely...
Are they trying to sell the book rights?
I definitely think it's funny.
It's very funny.
But I really think the law was fuzzy enough that if you could claim to have your own country and you could hold it and get diplomatic recognition, at a certain point, that'd be quite that would have quite an advantage.
I mean, that's how geopolitics works. I mean, it's writ very small, but this is what happens.
That's right.
You take over some bit of real estate and you hold it and you get recognized.
Well, and they were selling passports and selling other privileges.
They could claim citizenship and stuff.
The Bates family retained Sealand and maintained their privileges all through the 80s and 90s, although the family eventually decamped from the actual nation of Sealand because it didn't have a pub or a grocery store.
It's a huge bummer out there. There's no off license.
And the family itself got most of its money from a seafood business.
Were they fishing from their platform?
No, I think they had ships or boat, you know, fishing boats. Their company was called the Fruits of the Sea, and so that was their real income source. And Sealand, you know, was their territory that gave them special rights and privileges. But at that point, you kind of feel like, oh, this is somewhat now settled law, or somewhat, you know, they are acknowledging that it's kind of a joke. In 1987, the UK extended its territorial waters to 12 nautical miles off the coast, which incorporated...
Which reabsorbed Sealand.
It reabsorbed Sealand, and there wasn't any... The precedent of their independence did not then... sort of... They weren't able to be then an enclave within the UK that... Some San Marino that hadn't been incorporated.
Well, I have two questions. One, countries can just unilaterally decide where their territorial waters are, or is there a UN limit that the UK was within?
So originally, territorial waters were established basically 3 nautical miles around a nation, which was...
It's not far.
No, it wasn't. And it was based on how far you could fire a cannon, essentially.
Yeah.
But even in ye olden times of the British Empire, nations like Iceland and Norway and Sweden, typical Norsk mentality, claimed 6 nautical miles. But as the years went on, there was more and more recognition that the coastal waters were rich with... Right. With the plenitude of the sea, with the fruits of the sea, if you will. And so nations, you know, got pretty offended if you were fishing 3 miles off the coast, we could see your boats and you're out there taking all the fish. So gradually 12 nautical miles became sort of universally accepted. And really the UK was kind of late in establishing 12 nautical miles. Nowadays, there are multiple zones. There's the 12 nautical miles is your territorial sea, and then there's another 12 nautical miles that's called your contiguous zone, but then your exclusive economic zone goes out 200 miles.
And you're allowed to keep other countries from fishing, nations from fishing that? Is that right?
Well, yes, but this is often a big part of the dispute between China and other nations in that area, because China will go out and build islands out of dumped sand
and
then claim 200
past that.
Yeah, 200 miles around it.
They're gradually getting closer and closer to California.
And Peru claims that their territorial waters out to 200 nautical miles and not just their exclusive zones. So this remains a thing in real contention.
But you don't think there's any sense that the UK made this legal change with Sealand in mind, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, they were the problem with the whole selling titles and passports from Sealand is that by the 90s, other companies, like fraudulent companies, had been selling Sealand passports in places like Russia and Hong Kong, and for like $1,000.
That's the problem with a kind of purely symbolic joke product, right?
That's right.
It's hard to keep a monopoly.
And so by the 90s, there were over 4,000 fake Sealand passports out there, and people were using Sealand as a... you know, trying to get immunity from drug prosecutions. It was basically having a Sealand passport was an opportunity to also open a fraudulent business of some kind. And so in 1997, the government of Sealand, now being run by Prince Regent Michael, revoked all Sealand passports as an attempt to, you know, put the kibosh on using Sealand fraudulently.
Seems like they have a branding problem.
Right. In 2006, there was a fire on Sealand that...
Of all the nations in the world that have a fire, I'm the least worried about Sealand. It's like nearly all concrete.
Well, yeah, except there were some caretakers there that had to be removed, I think, at least one by helicopter.
There are caretakers living there full-time.
Yeah. And who knows whether it's like a summer job. I mean, it feels like being a caretaker of Sealand would be the perfect job for some people I know. Like get the hell out of town and go write your book of poetry out there.
There's fishing probably.
Yeah, but you're 30 feet above the waves. It's very long. Yeah, you'd need a real.
Like it takes half an hour to find out if you have a boot or a tire. Is that still a thing? People getting boots and tires when they fish?
Well, I don't know how many boots are like 7 nautical miles off the coast of the UK, but maybe not zero.
It always seemed a little unlikely that people kept getting boots.
Well, the thing is, a lot of ships sank out there, and probably the boots. A lot of those fisher or a lot of those Royal Navy guys had boots.
Yeah, you wear boots.
Can confirm.
To see.
Yeah. In 2007, Pirate Bay, which you remember was a Swedish like black market website.
Yeah.
Pirate Bay tried to buy Sealand as an opportunity to, you know, to escape the laws of Sweden.
Despite the new British law that it's within the territorial limit?
Yeah, because I think the Bateses were still, although they had most of the nations of the world recognized the UK 12-mile limit, the Bateses were still holding out that they were an independent nation. And as far as into the 2000, until the present day, the Royal Navy has deemed this a very minor issue.
Nobody wanted to enforce
issue.
The...
Yeah, I mean, to go out there and take it over seems like who cares.
Yeah.
But Pirate Bay tried to buy it for, I think the offer was 700 million pounds, 900 million pounds, but the deal fell through, partly because I think Pirate Bay did their due diligence and realized that this was not the solution to being prosecuted by the Swedes. The world is too big now.
Too small and flat.
Or too small, right? And in October of 2012, Prince Roy finally died, and Michael became the prince of Sealand.
Is he a good and just prince of Sealand and his population of zero?
I think that he is now getting older, and it is run by Sealand is now run by the new Prince Regent, James, who's the grandson of Roy, Prince Roy. But they continue to issue some noble titles, and
I bet they don't spend any time there, huh?
No, but probably they all go out on a sunny day, but. No less than Ed Sheeran.
Sudden Ed Sheeran appearance.
Has a noble title from Sealand, and I think you could, even now, go online and become a Baron of Sealand. Let's see.
Any sufficiently pale personality can do it? Do you have to be a UK citizen?
Well, no. You explicitly aren't a UK citizen.
Not anymore.
And unlike being a Duke of Pomerania, you can become a Baron or Baroness of Sealand for $59.99.
Yeah, but you get what you pay for. I mean, I don't know how phony that Elector of Marburg thing is, but at least it sounds like a real place, you know? Like, Sealand just sounds like a theme park ride.
I mean, to be a Duke of Sealand is a bigger, that's a bigger check. A Duke of Sealand is a $500. And
is this like a Kickstarter? Does it come with, do they get early access to Sealand booking or anything?
Well, apparently the Queen of England, or in this case, the King of England, is a Duke of Sealand because they're...
He was honorary.
Well, they are also Dukes of Normandy and Dukes of Lancaster, and so Sealand...
Being in between
becomes...
Is that how it works?
I'm not sure.
If I'm the King of England and the Duke of Normandy, I get
everything in between?
Yeah, it's a gradation in between.
Well, is the seabed also part of...
Yeah, I'm the King
part
of...
Your
you'd
duchy?
Be the King of Atlantis also if you control both sides of... Yeah, France having both French Guiana and European France,
right?
Probably has some kind of dominion over Atlantis.
If you buy this noble title, it will take 5 to 10 days to process.
Well, So, to me, that's a deal breaker.
So if you need it right away.
Yeah, this is an impulse purchase for me.
And you do, you get a beautiful certificate. So I'm not sure some of you are going to be snobs and want to be a Duke of Pomerania. But really, you should gauge which is funnier.
What do you want to be above your toilet if the weasel is ever out of style? And that concludes the Principality of Sealand, entry 987.IS6022, certificate number 6611, in the Omnibus. As always, you are very unlikely to find us at Omnibus Project, at Ken Jennings or at John Roderick, depending on the state of social media in your particular time zone. But you can email us. People in our time did all the time at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Somebody, by the way, emailed me the other day who's listens to the show and is a Google employee saying, didn't you guys used to have omnibusproject@gmail.com? And whatever happened there, and would you like me to try to salvage that account?
Somebody from Google said this?
Yeah, I mean, not representing Google, but
right.
But somebody who apparently was not above into the Gmail user files.
Didn't we have omnibusproject@gmail.com?
But what happened? How did we lose that Gmail? Did we just forget the password?
I think that's what it was.
But there's password recovery methods. We were just too lazy to use them.
I don't even remember if I ever... Well, what did you reply? Did you say, yes, please help us?
I said, I think we were omnibusproject@gmail.com. Were we? Should I see if our man wrote back here?
You know, I realized here that the Grand Duke of Pomerania and Livonia, as part of your title, you buy 9 square feet of dedicated land. So you actually have 9 square feet. That's 3 by 3 that I suppose you could have a coat of arms. I don't think you get that with Sealand.
Our Googler friend says, this can be done, but only while in communication with the customer. Can we set up a phone call or Google video call?
Oh, this is just an attempt to get a fake Zoom call.
This is Amway. I like that it has to be Google video. Like if I say, no, it's got to be Zoom or Skype, you would be like, nope.
Google video.
I don't think I have Google video. I guess the question is, did we have omnibusproject@gmail.com?
I think we did.
Can't remember. Do we want it?
Yes, I think we do.
But we're just going to have 2 email addresses that people will not remember which is the correct one then. Well, we can set one to forward,
I guess. No, we set one to forward. I recently saw a deal on the Chicago Music Exchange website, yeah. And I gave them my credit card number, and it wouldn't go through, so I gave them my other credit card number. And then I realized too late that it was chicagomusicexchange.sales, not .com, and I had to immediately call my bank and American Express and get new credit cards because it was a scam. So we don't want somebody else to have omnibusproject@gmail.com and be issuing like fake titles.
Did I tell you I almost lost my health insurance for my family once because of one of these stupid things?
How?
It was the same kind of thing. My credit card company was like, we've got unauthorized activity in Xi'an province, China. Is that you? And I said, no, but please don't change my numbers. It'll ruin my life. And they're like, too late. We changed your numbers. They sent us all new cards, and I spent the next few weeks transferring over everything. You know, it dribbles on for months. You'll be like, oh, shoot, Netflix is still on the old card.
Yeah.
And the one thing I forgot was the last thing you want to forget, which is my health insurance auto payment. And by the time they finally send you a physical letter 3 months later, it was like, we're closing insurance. Your account next week. And by the time I opened that, it was a week ago. And I was like, ah! They were like, yeah, we don't have to give you insurance anymore. I mean, you can file a request in writing for us to make an exception to our normally ironclad policy, but you didn't pay for 2 months.
How awful.
And I was like, you didn't tell me I was... They were nice.
Nice.
Yeah, they were nice and let me have my exorbitant self-insured health insurance. And that's why it can really ruin your life to get a new credit card. That's a fascinating story. So yeah, do we want omnibusproject@gmail.com back? In the meantime, don't send email there because we don't know if we have it yet.
We want you to send mail to theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
Pending a review by our friend in Mountain View. You could also mail us things at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Unless we have any friend at the post office that wants to get us a better box number, the way our Google friend is offering.
Yeah.
Can we get the lucky whatever the Dubai lucky number is for a P.O. box?
Well, the problem with this is, having talked about it, I know right now there are at least 100 of our listeners who have lost access to some Gmail account and are like, there's a way? Because, you know, there's never a way, right? Google has no interest in helping you.
Google does not have a giant service center.
And so now they're thinking, I'm just going to write Ken and John and they'll help me restore access to my Google account, and we will not.
We never should have outed our friend who was offering to help us.
Yeah, we will not, nope. And actually that person does not exist. Ken is joking.
No good deed goes unpunished. Yeah. And plus, he has it hard enough. He has to work for Google.
Oh, burn. Sick burn.
Do they, even if they're evil now, do they still have the breakfast cereals and stuff? I hope.
Google has breakfast cereal?
Yeah, famously, they'd want you to spend all night there, so they'd have kitchens stocked with snacks. And
they were not selling
their own Google-O's.
That's what I was thinking.
Stores like everywhere.
Google-O's. And the logo of the two O's is two. Yeah.
They're blue and red or whatever. Then yeah, so get us a lucky, if you work for the post office, get us a luckier, because our box number has 2 fours, which is very bad luck. And
in Chinese.
And once China takes over, they're not gonna want to send us anything. So yeah. Please give us P.O. Box 88888 at no additional charge. And find Futurelings online where they congregate. There's a fun Facebook group. It was great. The other day I wanted to answer some question about a past entry without actually listening to any second of the omnibus.
Sure, sure.
And they just went and did it for me. It was like TaskRabbit, except I didn't pay them. You can support the omnibus the most direct way by going to patreon.com/omnibusproject. And there you will have the opportunity to find a wealth of previously unimagined omnibus content, including 50-odd addenda shows.
Odd being an understatement.
50-odd ones and several normal ones. What did the lusty lady used to say? 50 pretty girls and one ugly one or whatever? One.
Was that the lusty lady?
I think that was
the other one, the showgirls.
I will yield to you and your knowledge of downtown Seattle topless bars. There are so many perks and privileges available. It's pretty much the equivalent of being the Prince of Sealand, except instead of sending you a lame certificate, we send you cool stuff.
The perks and privs.
You want to check out the perks, short for perquisites, and the privs, short for privsivsits.
Privsivsits.
By going to patreon.com/omnibusproject and signing up today.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if the worst comes soon, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon. Another entry in the omnibus.